The Zone Coverage Podcast Network.
Hey, this is Chris Jimenez, and you're listening to Midwest Swing on the Zone Coverage Podcast Network.
You can put it on the board!
Woo!
We're back here for another episode of Midwest Swing. You can find us on Twitter at Midwest Swing Pod. We are part of the Zone Coverage Podcast Network, which you can find on Twitter at Zone Coverage MN. I am your host, Brandon Warren. You can find me on Twitter at Brandon_Warren. And we are coming at you with a very special postseason edition of Midwest Swing. The Twins are getting prepared to take on the New York Yankees in the American League wildcard game this evening at Yankee Stadium. And with that in mind, we do have a Yankees perspective on the show today. You may know him from CBS Sports and Pinstripe. What's the Pinstripe blog that you're with too as well? It's Mike Agzisa. Again, CBS Sports used to be a Fangraphs, but I know you write some Yankee stuff too.
Yeah, River Avenue Blues is my, the Yankee side I write for as well.
Sure. Okay, I was thinking it was Pinstripe something or other, but I think that's the SB Nation blog, Pinstripe Alley.
Yeah.
Okay. So, River Avenue Blues, not to try cross wires, so sorry about that. But so you've obviously got some Yankee perspective that we're going to try tap into as far as what to expect from the Pinstripers this evening. First and foremost, I want to ask you, though, what were the expectations coming into this season for this Yankees team? Because you look at the roster, and it's not the typical Yankees roster. There's some young guys. There's some aging vets who maybe are not living up to their contract or whatever, but have kind of been used to fill in, whether it was Chase Headley or Jacoby Ellsbury when Aaron Hicks went down. You know, what were the expectations heading into the season for this Yankees team?
You know, the Yankees themselves, they don't call it rebuilding. They called it a transition year, and their goal was to use this farm system they built up and just try to incorporate more young players into the roster. And, you know, a lot of, whether it was the projection systems or just people kind of estimating what they thought the Yankees would do, they had them in like that 80 to 82 win range. And I didn't think that was crazy because it just looked like they had a lot of young players set to play big roles. And when you have that many young players, you know, there could be struggles along the way. But basically, it's been the best-case scenario for everyone. I mean, Aaron Judge has been amazing. He set the rookie home run record. He was an 8-win player this year. Luis Severino pitched like an ace after being terrible last season. And, you know, Chad Green was great out of the bullpen. Nobody saw that coming. You know, they've gone from this, like, 80 to 82 win, maybe optimistically, like, 85 wins to 91 wins. They could have easily won. Their run expected, their run differential had them pegged for like 100 wins this season.
And it's crazy.
They just had some, especially early in the season when Chapman wasn't pitching well and Tyler Clippard was just terrible. They had a lot of really winnable games slip away early in the season that kind of skews things. But they were just so much better than everyone expected. And it's mostly because the young players just hit on their best case scenarios. But some of the veteran guys played well. You know, Brett Gardner had 20 home runs. He had a career high. Chase Headley had this ridiculous hot streak in the middle of the season. Jacoby Ellsbury had a huge hot streak in August and September. CC Sabathia was better than he was last season when he was pretty good and he stayed healthy. And it just seems like a lot of things went exactly right for them. Even though the Yankees, they had a lot of injuries this year, a lot of smaller, you know, this guy misses a few weeks, this guy misses a few weeks after that. Even though they had all these little injuries spread out, it seems like just about everything went right for them.
Now, what's the perception from fans? I mean, obviously, if they were not expecting as much, it's been a pleasant surprise, but have they kind of hulked up now and are expecting another World Series? Are they thinking playing with house money at this point, like Twins fans might be? You know, what are the expectations heading into this game as far as moving on and doing some real damage in this postseason?
I think most Yankees fans are thinking World Series here because that's just the way they're wired after the last 25 years. But there is definitely like a section of Yankee fans who kind of see this as house money that like, wow, we weren't expecting the Yankees to go to the postseason. We weren't expecting any of this to really happen. So even if they do lose tonight or if they win tonight and get knocked out by the Indians or whatever, overall, it's been a really successful season for the Yankees, and really anything that kind of happens from here on out is just gravy.
So let's back up a little bit. What did you think of the attrition leading up to this game as far as all the teams in the race? Now, that doesn't necessarily apply to the Yankees, who, at least from my perception, finished the season on a fairly recent or a reasonable stretch. They played fine baseball. But the Twins, I won't say the Twins backed into this. They played 600 ball from the trade deadline on. But they were not terrific down the stretch the last 2 weeks of the season. But if you looked at the last 10 games for any of those teams that were in the thick of things, you know, the last 10 games in terms of on the standings, it was 4-6s, 3-7s, 2-8s. Basically, none of those teams wanted to jump up and really challenge the Twins, who kind of coasted into the wild card over the last couple weeks. Were you shocked by that at all?
I was. You know, only five teams in the American League finished over 500 this year, I believe. And,
yeah, they're all in the postseason.
Right. And as recently as, I guess, maybe 3 or 4 weeks ago, you know, the Angels were right there with the Twins, and the Royals weren't that far back, and the Mariners weren't that far back. But then it just seems like the last 2 weeks, everybody just kind of fell apart. And the Yankees and Twins were pretty close there for a few weeks. And then when there was the sweep at Yankee Stadium, that kind of separated them, that kind of gave the Yankees control of the first wild card spot. But it just seems like nobody wanted to win that second spot. And the Twins deserve all the credit in the world for that, basically that two-month stretch where they were playing 600 ball. But it just seems like nobody wanted to win it. You know, the Angels, they tried to do it. They just, you know, it just never came together for them. It seemed like every time I watched the Angels, they were blowing a lead, and it just wasn't enough to pick up the slack there. And the Rangers, it seemed like they would win like 7 in a row or go like or 8-2 or something like that, and then they would immediately lose like 5 straight and never they get on any kind of success, have any kind of extended success. It's just there's a lot of parity in the AL, a lot of really just mediocre teams. And the difference was the Twins' young players really stepping up in that second half, and the other team's just not getting that performance.
What do you attribute that attrition to? I mean, is it an AL that's top-heavy because Cleveland and Houston were so good? I haven't looked at interleague records, but I know the National League is obviously a tougher league in terms of whoever gets out of the playoffs is going to be battle-tested because of the pitching, and you know, the Dodgers are going to be tough. The Nationals, I mean, nobody's talking about the Cubs, really, and they won the freaking World Series last year. What do you attribute the attrition on the American League side to? Just mediocre roster construction? I mean, think about the fact that, like, the Angels had the fossilized remains of Albert Pujols batting cleanup down the stretch. I mean, that is not what a playoff team should be doing at this point. What do you think has gone into that? I mean, I don't think anybody would have predicted that during spring training, that the only teams that made the playoffs were the only 500 teams in the AL, right?
Right, and you know, I think that there's a lot of factors here. I think part of it is in the NL you have like almost every rebuilding team is kind of in the NL there, but at least to start the season. You know, the Braves, the Phillies, the Padres, they were all in the NL, and in the AL there was the A's, and then the White Sox kind of really threw in the towel at midseason. The NL is more top heavy, at least I think it is, and I don't know, with the AL it just seems like it seems like it's a little bit more wide open, and because of that, I think teams are not really... They're kind of towing the line a little bit. They're not making that big move to go for it at the trade deadline, but they're not completely tearing it down either. You know, the Rangers, I feel like they could have done more than just trade their impending free agents. I mean, Yu Darvish, and they could have done more than doing that. If they would have just taken, like, a firm stance here and say, look, we're either going to go for it or rebuild. We should trade Elvis Andrus while he's having this ridiculous season he's probably never going to have again, and other pieces like that, they just kind of towed the line and did the bare minimum, and I feel like a lot of AL teams are doing that. Maybe it has to do with the NL. Teams are forcing the other teams to make smarter moves because it's so competitive, whether it's the Cubs and the Dodgers, and you know, you have to really kind of be sharp and on your toes there to contend because those teams are so great. Whereas in the AL, it's not that great. I mean, the Red Sox won the division this year, but they were not great at all.
No, their offense was like bad.
I feel like 1 through 25, the Yankees are the more talented team, and the reason they didn't win the division was just the Yankees blew too many games earlier in the season and with their bullpen, and they had a couple of games where Chapman blew against the Red Sox as well, which is basically the difference in the division. But I don't know. It just seems like all the superpowers are in the NL, and it's maybe forcing teams to be a little bit smarter with their moves. Whereas the AL, it's not to say the teams are stupid or anything. It's just like it's not as competitive. There's not this big competitive divide where teams are trying to close the gap. It feels like every team in the AL thinks they're in the race, but they're not quite sure of it, so they're not completely going all in. They're not completely stepping back. It's a very weird. And the Yankees kind of did this last season when they traded everybody away at the deadline. It just worked out that they traded everybody, got all these prospects right as they had their own prospects coming up. You know, they traded away Carlos Beltran right as Aaron Judge was ready to play right field.
Yeah.
It just, the timing just worked out for them, and I don't know. It just seems like AL teams are so much more hesitant to really kind of pick a path and either, okay, if you're going to rebuild, then rebuild. If you're going to go for it, then go for it. Don't just sit in the middle, and it feels like a lot of teams are sitting in the middle.
Well, and the Yankees flipped those guys. Aroldis Chapman brought them back significant value, and Andrew Miller as well. But then down the stretch, I mean, they weren't impossibly out of it in September, if I remember correctly, last year either, were they?
No, they were.
I mean, they were in the mix. It was never. I mean, it wasn't like they were Toronto right out of it or anything like that, or Oakland out of it. But they were within 5-6 games, I think, down the stretch.
Yeah, but on September 1st, they were like 2.5 games back of the second wild card spot.
And yeah, and at that point, it's more about how many teams you trail than games, I think.
Exactly right, and that was the problem. They were 2.5 back, but I think they had like 3 teams ahead of them, and they were all not AL East teams, so they didn't have head to head.
Yeah. Well, I think in that mix, too, teams have to win by definition every single night because of how many teams are involved. They're all playing. Half of those teams, in theory, have to win, or maybe more than half, depending on where they are in their schedule. That makes it hard to catch up.
Right, and I think that's the important thing because, okay, you could be 3 games back, but if you got 3 teams ahead of you, I mean, every day you win, another team is going to win, you're not going to gain ground on them. And every game you lose, you're going to lose ground to someone. It's really hard to make up ground when you have multiple teams ahead of you. If there's 4 months left in the season, you could do it. But once you get into September, it can be tough. And that's where the Yankees were last season. And the Yankees, I mean, they were in the postseason. They traded everybody, and they kind of got back in the race, mostly because Gary Sanchez was just out of his mind and single-handedly winning games for them. And yeah, they were better last year. They were more exciting to watch, certainly. Before the trade deadline, the Yankees were just boring. They were not fun. They were an old team. They were slow. It was not fun to watch at all. And they slowly started to gravitate towards the young players, really kind of dove in the second half. And then it's carried over this year. And this has been the most exciting Yankee team, just from a pure, just how they're playing, the excitement, the energy in the dugout. The Yankees haven't been this lively in a very long time.
So here's a theory I have, too, on the AL being so nebulous. Detroit kind of threw a wrench into things by winning, like, basically 0 games in September, right? Twins got fat on them with, basically, I think it was winning 6 or 7 games, if I'm not mistaken. So their schedule in September includes Kansas City, Toronto, the White Sox, the A's, the Royals again. If they're losing to those teams that were not really in the postseason mix, all those teams are going to get closer to 500 without getting to 500. You're going to have a lot of teams with 78, 79, or even 74, 75 wins. So maybe the Detroit Tigers played a bigger key in it. You know, if the Tigers are competent, even just to the point where they're in games in that month, you know, I mean, they lost some games to Cleveland, 7 games to Cleveland in the month, too, that obviously that's going to raise the water level for Cleveland and lower it for everybody else. So I think maybe Detroit, after trading Verlander, played a big part in the wildness for the rest of the league as well.
Oh, yeah, I absolutely agree with that. And they won something like 13 of their last 54 games, and that's a third of the season.
Right.
And I remember when the Yankees and the Twins were closer together in the standings, when they were separated by like a game or two before the series in New York, you know, people here, Yankees fans, were looking at the schedule and saying, you know, this Twins series is huge because the Twins have 7 games left with the Tigers, and you kind of got to expect them to win most of those because the Tigers are just so bad. They're terrible. And the Yankees, they didn't have a really tough schedule down the stretch, but playing the Rays and the Blue Jays they played, and those teams, they're just better than the Tigers were, and you couldn't you couldn't really count on beefing up your schedule against your record against those guys. Mm-hmm. You were going to have to play competitive games and really make an effort there, because if the Yankees would have lost 2 of 3 to the Twins, things would have been much more interesting, because the Yankees, they were really good down the stretch, but, you know, you wonder how much how that would have played with the race closer and a little bit more pressure on. Once they swept the Twins, it was kind of like, all right, got the top wild card spot locked up. We kind of take it easy the rest of the way. Girardi started to rest guys a little bit more.
Sure.
It just changed the whole dynamic. You just wonder what happens. What happens if the Twins win 2 of 3 instead of getting swept, and that the race is really close and they have all those games left against the Tigers? Yankees are sweating it out a little bit more.
Well, how much do you think history between these teams matter? And here's the deal. I know, you know, like 2002, when this whole situation started with the Twins basically being inept against the Yankees, none of that matters. Joe Mauer wasn't in the big leagues then. CC Sabathia was like a rookie with the Indians. You know, we all know that doesn't really matter or really affect this. But even just recently, the 3-game sweep in the Bronx for the Twins were not particularly competitive. Do you think fans or even analysts such as yourself are putting much weight into that, or is it really a clean slate in this game just because the managers are going to manage it, basically throwing everything at the wall to try steal this game?
You know, the history doesn't mean anything tonight because it's just one game and whatever happens is going to happen. But I think it's a good talking point. It's a kind of an interesting talking point that the Yankees have really just kind of dominated the head-to-head series.
Mm-hmm.
You know, going into tonight, are the Yankees a better team than the Twins? Yeah, I mean, yeah, almost certainly. They had a better record in the regular season, scored more runs, allowed fewer runs. They're the better team. But the better team doesn't always win. And
right.
History, maybe it makes the Yankees feel confident, and maybe the Twins look at it as, you know, maybe they look at it as a chip on their shoulder, or maybe they look at it as, oh, well, we have no chance. I don't think that's – I think they're going to look at it as, who cares? Nobody – that doesn't mean anything. You know, what happened when Johan Santana was facing Derek Jeter doesn't matter.
Right.
You know, that was so long ago. But I think the sweep 2 weeks ago or 3 weeks ago, I guess now, just kind of reaffirm that the Yankees are the better team here. They have the history on their side, so maybe they feel a little bit better about things. I don't think the players themselves care much about it at all. I think they, on both sides, they know it's one game, anything could happen. They respect each other, and, you know, Irvin Santana is really good, and he could go out and shut down the Yankees. And, you know, even when he faced them 2 weeks ago, they scored 2 runs, and it was kind of a tough game for them. But they, even though they won it, they still didn't exactly light them up. The history, it's just one of those things that's just kind of weird, because it just usually don't see teams like that, the head-to-head series, be dominated for such a long stretch of time. And the Twins were good for most of that. It's just a weird thing that just haven't worked out. And, you know, I think fans and analysts may be talking about it a little too much. I mean, you kind of have to mention it, but it doesn't mean anything. It's not going to affect the outcome tonight at all.
Sure. To your point, though, about any team can beat any other team on any given day, I mean, the Dodgers lost 3 games to the Phillies this year. They lost 3 games to the Braves this year. Those are your number, I think, 2-9 drafting teams this upcoming season. I mean, it just, again, that's over the course of a long season, and the Dodgers still won those season series. But a lot of things can happen in a big league game, and the gap of talent between the great teams and the not great teams is more narrow than if you're looking at a Division I baseball game or a high school baseball game where, you know, teams can be laughed off the field. So, to your point there, I think, yeah, anything in theory could happen. That's obviously true. As far as the Santana-Severino matchup, too, maybe it's a little convoluted, but I think there is a blueprint that kind of gives Twins fans some hope, if nothing else, in that outside of the Aaron Judge home run, Johan Irvin Santana, his given name is Johan, did a fairly good job of shutting down the Yankees in that series, which can be forgotten since the Twins were swept off their butts. But the Twins did get to Severino in that game against Bartolo Colon, who had probably his worst start as a Twin. But in 3 innings, the Twins scored 3 earned runs, had him throw, I think, 46 pitches in that final inning. So, again, that's not to say the Twins are guaranteed to do anything big against Severino, who, in my estimation, was the third horse in a 2-horse race for the Cy Young this year. I mean, he's a fantastic young pitcher. But is it crazy to say at least you can see the framework of what might make sense if the Twins are going to hang with the Yankees tonight?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. You know, Severino has thrown 190-something innings this year. He's thrown more innings than he ever has before. And, when the Twins, when he had that start against the Twins, he couldn't put anyone away. They were fouling off a lot of pitches. There were a lot of deep counts.
Especially
there.
Joe Mauer, I think, at 13 pitch at bat, 12 or 13.
Yeah, that was the at bat that kind of made everything boil over there. The Twins put some runs up after that, but Severino wasn't really putting guys away. He wasn't locating as well as he normally does. And there was, after that, there was talk, you know, okay, is he wearing down? Because the Yankees, they weren't very, they did give him an extra day of rest here and there, but they didn't do anything crazy to control his workload. And, you know, questions arose. Is he starting to wear down? You know, is what's going on here? And then he came out the next two times out and was brilliant, and so that kind of answered any questions. But the Twins were a really good fastball-hitting team, and Severino has a great fastball, and that doesn't – I don't know who has the advantage there, because Severino, he was the hardest-throwing starter in baseball this season.
Right.
His slider is so good, and his changeup is – that's been the difference for him, is his changeup is now like an actual weapon and not just kind of a show-me pitch.
Yeah, I mean, he cut three earned runs off his ERA almost. I mean, that's a big difference.
Right, and last year, I mean, the difference between Severino last year and Severino this year is completely night and day. Last year, he had no command at all. Changeup was, like, non-existent. And he just looks like a different pitcher this year. And the Yankees put him in the bullpen in the second half last year, and a lot of people, when that happens, they kind of freak out, like, oh, why did they put him in the bullpen? That's the wrong move. And then he pitched so well in the bullpen, and everybody said, just keep him there. But the Yankees moved him back to the rotation. And he kind of has that bullpen mentality as a rotation. I absolutely don't. I absolutely think there's that he doesn't become the pitcher he is today without going to the bullpen last year. I think that helped him a lot.
No, it works for some guys. Carlos Carrasco was one of those guys.
Right, and that doesn't mean he can't be beaten in one game series. The difference, you know, while looking at this game, I feel like Santana, Severino, I feel like that is a closer pitching matchup than people are maybe giving credit for. The difference to me is what happens in the middle innings. You know, if Luis Severino runs into trouble in the third inning again, Girardi's going to bring in Chad Green, and Chad Green is unbelievable, and the Twins don't have a Chad Green. That's
how many innings can he give them, though? I mean, in theory, three or two or?
Certainly two. He could probably go three depending on his pitch count.
Sure.
And I think Girardi's master plan tonight is he's got six innings from Green, Robertson, and Chapman. Those are his three big guys right now, and I think he lined them all up for this game where he's used Chad Green for two or three innings pretty much all season. He's used Robertson for two innings at a time for kind of preparing him for this throughout September. He used him for multiple innings. And Chapman doesn't like to go multiple innings, but he will if he has to. And I think that's the plan. If the Yankees need six innings from those guys, they'll get it. And if they don't, if pitch counts get high, you've got Dylan Betances and Tommy Kahnle as your backup plans there. And
not bad ones.
That's either. The difference to me. Yeah, that's the difference to me in this game, where if Severino gets into trouble early, the Yankees could turn it over to somebody who's just going to come out throwing fire and just dominating, whereas I don't know what happens if Santana gets roughed up a little early. Do they bring Berrios out of the bullpen?
Yes, that is the plan.
That is the plan. So that's what I thought when I saw him come out of relief,
come
out of the bullpen. I think it was Friday. Because that's their best. Well, you know, if they have to use Berrios in relief, it'll screw up their ALDS rotation, but you got to get there first.
Right. It's like losing the game in the eighth when you can't win it, but you can certainly lose it. I do want to ask you this, though. Luis Severino was not originally scheduled to pitch Game 3 against the Twins when they were in the Bronx 2 weeks ago. Masahiro Tanaka gets moved out. Severino moved in. Did you question the wisdom of that? To me, it almost made me feel like maybe the Twins would see Tanaka in this game instead. But I guess there's two ways to look at it. If you want to shield the Twins from Severino, who had never seen him before then and haven't since, you could do that. But also, if you want to drop him in to see how he responds, that's another way to gauge what he needs to get better at against this Twins team, whatever. I wondered about the wisdom of giving the Twins looks at a hotshot who throws hard, has really good stuff, when, you know, familiarity might help the Twins in this case.
Yeah, a few things about this. I mean, if the element of surprise was going to help Severin in the wild card game, it didn't help him in that game because he didn't pitch well.
Right.
And
exactly.
And the the Yankees, the reason they made that move for a few reasons, and I think the biggest was, it allowed them to start Severino three times in the regular season the rest of the way if they needed him instead of just two. So if they would have pushed him back, they had an off day the next day, it would have really screwed up their schedule. If they hadn't started him in that final game, he would have made just two more starts after that. But they had the option, by starting him the game early, they had the option of starting him in a game 163 against the Red Sox, which was a possibility because they were so close.
Yeah, up until the very end there.
Yeah, so the Yankees, they made that move for a few reasons, and I think a little familiarity helped the Twins. Yeah, I think so. But Severino faced the Red Sox five times this year, and he pitched great every single time. I'm not sure how much that's going to help them. And
right.
I feel like maybe the familiarity thing is maybe getting a little overstated there. And
it certainly possible.
When they did make the move, I was like, oh, that's kind of interesting. I thought they would try to hide him. But then once I realized that they're setting up the rotation to have Severino pitch a potential tiebreaker game against the Red Sox, then it kind of made sense. They're looking big picture here. It obviously didn't screw up their rotation that they couldn't start Severino in the wild card game. It just made things a little bit better for them with the division race, and they're confident in Severino. They figure, well, let the Twins see him. You know, if it helps them, fine. But we don't think it's going to make a huge difference, and that's why they did it.
So, park factors on Stat Corner has left-handed hitters with a home run park factor of 142 at Yankee Stadium. For people who don't know the context of that, it basically means that the park is an absurdly good park for lefties to hit home runs at. How much do you think that could favor the Twins with two guys that are right-handed hitters in Byron Buxton and Brian Dozier, and then the other seven in the lineup will be either left-handed or switch hitters batting left-handed against Severino and a large part of the bullpen, other than Aroldis Chapman and maybe Chase and Shrev. Do you think that that's something that maybe is a little understated that could favor the Twins as far as maybe Eddie Rosario popping a home run or Max Kepler, you know, that kind of thing?
Yeah, it seems like every game at Yankee Stadium is kind of, maybe not decided, but it at least features like one home run that maybe wouldn't be a home run at other ballparks just because sure. Right field is so short. It could certainly help the Twins that their lineup is going to be very left-handed heavy. And that's, you know, I think that's one of the reasons that I think the backup plan for tonight would have been starting CC Sabathia instead of Sonny Gray or Tanaka. Sabathia's been really good. And once the Yankees decided to start Sabathia on Saturday because they were in the division race, they had a chance to win that game and stay alive. They decided to start Sabathia over Jaime Garcia, and they ended up winning the game, but the Red Sox clinched anyway. But that kind of took Sabathia off the table. Yeah, I think the lefties could definitely help. The one thing that, you know, Severino's been good against lefties all season because of his changeup. And the Yankees, they don't have, I mean, they have Chapman, but he's not going to come in to get, you know, Joe Mauer out in the fourth inning. That's just not how it's going to work.
Right.
Their righties in the bullpen, they're good at getting out lefties. They're really good. And some of them, like Betances, like Adam Warren, they're better against lefties than they are righties. And they have been for several years now, so it's not just a kind of a fluke. So I don't think that's a huge deal. The Yankees don't have a lefty. But, I mean, the Twins are certainly built for Yankee Stadium where they can just pull a ball down the line and you get a cheap home run that way. And mm-hmm. That could be the difference in this game. That was what happened in 2015 against the Astros. Tanaka gave up two home runs in five innings, two solo home runs, and they were both kind of just cheap home runs, and the Yankees didn't get their cheap home runs, and that was the end of it. And, you know, the Yankees are built for Yankee Stadium as well. Even though they have a lot of righties, Aaron Judge and Gary Sanchez, they know how to hit home runs the other way into the short porch. So it's kind of interesting. All the left-handed hitters, though, I wonder with the Twins, you know, Severino's really going to need his changeup, and he's more confident in that pitch now. I just wonder how that's going to work, because I was expecting a really left-handed heavy lineup, and Yankee Stadium, that's just the way it is. You know, you pull some fly balls to right field, and some of them are going to go out when they would be caught in every other ballpark.
Yeah, and the Twins as an offense, and when Casey Stern was talking about on MLB Network Radio in August about a potential game, the Twins had like an 82 weighted runs created plus against the lefties. That bumped up. I wouldn't be surprised. I think it's about 96 or 97 now. They absolutely slaughtered guys like Derek Hall and Travis Wood, guys who either got released or were just horrible. And so the Twins kind of got fat on some bad lefties. So I still think the Twins have the ability to be stymied more by lefties than righties. So I think it's a point well taken. Obviously, bad lefties are not going to be in the same class as good lefties. Sabathia is certainly a good lefty, very smart at this point in his career. to more than make up the difference for what he doesn't have in stuff from beforehand. So I think he would have been a good matchup and could still, I think, in theory, be used in a spot early in the game if necessary. So we'll see what happens there. But before we let you go, I kind of want to look at the rosters here and just see if there were any surprises to you on either side or any guys maybe you weren't really aware of. So the Twins, pitching-wise, will have Matt Belisle, Jose Berríos, Buddy Beauchers, Alan Buznitz, Tyler Duffy, Dylan G., Trevor Hildenberger, Adalberto Mejia, Ryan Pressly, Taylor Rogers, and Irvin Santana, of course. Kind of a starter kit of who's who as far as Twins pitchers, but I think that who is more emphasized by fans of teams other than the Twins as far as who the heck are these guys? Anybody in that list stand out to you as someone you might not be aware of or someone that, you know, could play a factor that people might not know much about?
You know, when I was watching the Twins the last few weeks, Hildenberger really stood out because he's a
stud.
Right, and I didn't realize he was as good as, because I was watching like a random game, and he came into pitch, and he just mowed down the side, and I was like, whoa, who's this guy? And then I looked up his numbers, and his numbers were great, and that kind of came out of nowhere. I really didn't expect to see what he was doing this season. And you know, it feels like for both teams, they don't need 10, 11 pitchers, you know. It's basically
exactly.
The game plan for the Yankees is Severino to Green to Robertson to Chapman, and if they could go straight from Severino to Robertson, they will. The other guys are just on the roster for emergencies, and I'm sure Mahler is thinking, you know, Santana to Berríos to Belisle, and that's it, you know. We don't really want to use anyone else, but if we have to, we have these other eight guys.
Yeah, you got a lefty if Greg Bird is up late in the game, or Didi Gregorius, but yeah, you'd prefer not to.
Right, and so, I mean, it feels like a 25-man roster almost feels unnecessary for this game, but
yeah,
that's how they're built. I mean, the Yankees have their plan with those four guys, and if they need to use everyone else, they will. And the Twins, you know, if they're going to use Berríos in relief, I almost feel like that's the plan. You know, you go from Santana to Berríos, and hopefully Berríos hands the ball right off to Belisle. That would be like the master plan, I think, for them. Even as much as they, as good as Rogers was this year, as good as Hildenberger was, the fewer pitchers you use, the better, because the more you use, the more likely you are to run into someone who just doesn't have it that day.
Yeah, I think, too, with Hildenberger, you might have the ability, if, let's say, Berríos allows a base runner in the eighth and you need a double play ball, he's a ground ball guy. But other than that, you do really want to simplify things. As much as there might be a tendency for managers to want to manage and to really, you know, push buttons, sometimes it's better to just let the guys go. Position player-wise, Jason Castro, Mitch Garver, Chris Jimenez behind the plate. No surprises there. A-Ray Adrianza, Brian Dozier, Eduardo Escobar, Joe Mauer, Jorge Polanco, and Kenny Vargas among infielders. Byron Buxton, Zach Granite, Robbie Grossman, Max Kepler, and Eddie Rosario among outfielders. So, first of all, conspicuous by his absence is Miguel Sano, who apparently is not ready to go. Do you think there would have been any value in just having him on the roster to keep it in the back of the minds of the Yankees that maybe Sano could be used, even if the plan is all along not to use him?
Yeah, that surprised me. I thought he was going to be on the roster. You could put him in the on-deck circle, and it would change just the way Girardi kind of thought about things. But they're not going to have that option now. And I saw his shin is still bothering him. He came back, tried to play a few games.
He really played poorly, too. Like, he did not hit at all.
Yeah, that's what I saw. But I feel like if you're carrying 11 pitchers, I mean, geez, do you really need number 11?
Adalberto Mejia, for all intents and purposes, is not necessary. Dylan G is not necessary. Everybody else, I think you can make an argument for.
Yeah, and I think with G and Mejia, I mean, they're on the roster in case we're talking extra innings here and you need somebody to go long. That's why Sonny Gray is on the Yankees roster. If this thing goes to extra innings, he's kind of your guy there. But, you know, the 11th pitcher is not that necessary. If you put Sano on the roster, it at least, even if he's not available, he's good as a diversion because at least it gives Joe Girardi something to think about. Whereas, you know, do I maybe not want to bring in my lefty here because they might pinch it for Sano, who's standing there holding a bat, you know, getting ready? That feels like there's maybe some value there. Maybe it just doesn't matter. But I don't know. I don't think, you know, the 11th pitcher is all that necessary. And even if Sano couldn't go, being there is just something to think about, someone to keep in mind. I don't know. It seemed like that would be a good idea. You know, I don't know what this means for Sano going forward. If the Twins win tonight, I don't know if this means he's not okay for the ALDS or
whatever. It's worth wondering, yeah.
But for tonight, I mean, do they really need three catchers tonight? I don't know. Maybe.
Probably not, especially with Garver. They don't really trust behind the plate, I don't think. They've only been kind of having him catch a little bit. I mean, bringing a catcher along is just hard to do. And, you know, we saw with Juan Centeno last year, who was just terrible defensively. I mean, catchers need time to kind of gel with their pitchers. I think it's a obvious fact.
Yeah, and you know, the Yankees, we saw that here in 2008 when they traded for Ivan Rodriguez in the middle of the season. And Rodriguez, I mean, at that point of his career, he was on the decline and he couldn't really hit anymore, but he was still pretty good defensively. And then he got here, it was like he had no idea what was going on, didn't know any of the pitchers.
Yeah.
And teams are just kind of loath to make those changes behind the plate if they're at all avoidable. I mean, sometimes you just have to when there's no choice, but... three catchers in the wild card game. I could get it if they're going to, I don't know how aggressively they'll pinch hit for or pinch run for Castro or anything like that. You know, when the Yankees, when they played in the 2015 wild card game, they had three catchers on the roster. And the third catcher was Gary Sanchez, who at the time, he had like two at-bats.
Oh, yeah, I remember that. I was when I was writing about roster construction for previous so that I could get a feel for it. I remember seeing him on there and thinking, man, he was just a pup back then.
Yeah, and it's just... The 25-man roster for the wildcard game is kind of overkill, but that's what it is, you know. And at some point, you know, I remember the Blue Jays and the Orioles last year, they went to extra innings and they started to really dip deep into their bullpens. But these last, like, five spots on the roster, it's just like, well, who might we need in an emergency, you know? That's kind of what you pick.
The nice thing about Garver, though, is he hits lefties. He had, like, a 9-something OPS against him. So, I mean, maybe he's protection against Max Kepler versus Aroldis Chapman late in the game where Miguel Sano might have hit otherwise. I don't know. You know, he can stand in left field in a pinch, too. He's not great. But let's do this. Let's get to the Yankees roster before I let you go quick. Betances, Chapman, Gray, Green, Canely, Robertson, Sabathia, Severino, Shrav, Warren. Conspicuous by his absence, not really, Jaime Garcia. I think it's a funny story. The Twins traded Garcia, now they're playing the Yankees. It's not really a big thing, but as far as this pitching staff, any surprises?
No, not really. I thought maybe there was a chance they would only carry 9 pitchers. You know, Chasen Shreve was the one who was kind of on the bubble there because he's a lefty, but he doesn't really get out lefties. He's got a reverse split, and he has basically his entire big league career.
Mm-hmm.
I was kind of on the fence there. I thought maybe he wouldn't. Maybe he would get left off as favor another position player or whatever. But those are the 10 guys I think we all expected. And, I mean, maybe Sabathia was a bit of a surprise after starting Saturday. It was basically Sabathia or Garcia. And the Yankees just don't trust Garcia. That's all that came down to.
Yeah, I mean, that makes sense. Position players, you got Romain Sanchez, Bird, Castro, Frazier, Gregorius, Headley, Torreyes, Wade, Ellsbury, Frazier, Gardner, Hicks, Judge, and then as a DH, Matt Holliday. For me, I don't know much about Torreyes. I know he's a little guy, kind of a utility infielder. And then Tyler Wade, I know next to nothing about. So those are the two guys I'd like to get the 4-1-1 on. But any surprises for you?
No, not really. Torreyes has been the utility infielder since last season, since he made the team out of spring training. And he's this little guy. He's like he's listed at 5'8", but there's no way he's actually 5'8". He's got to be like 5'6" or so. And he is like an extreme bat control guy. He has like no power. Doesn't draw walks. He just gets the bat on the ball.
Sounds like a Minnesota Twin.
Yeah, he's and he's like a really great clubhouse guy. The Yankees love this guy. He's young. He's only 24, I believe. He's like a little bolt of energy, and he's like a big chemistry guy for them. And he, you know, Gini Gregorius missed a month. He missed basically all of April with a shoulder injury. And Torreyes played shortstop every day, and he hit like 310. And, you know, no power, no walks, but he still hit 310. And when your utility player does that, you feel okay. And then Castro missed. He had two stints on the disabled list with hamstring injuries. Torreyes started at second base, and he hit like 315 that whole time. And he's kind of been this really quality reserve player for the Yankees. And he bounced around last year. He was in like 4 different organizations in the span of 10 months, and he just kind of made the Yankees in spring training, and he's not going anywhere.
Yeah.
He's not going to start tonight, obviously, but he's the backup infielder. And Tyler Wade is one of the Yankees' best prospects, you know, especially now that guys have graduated and been traded. He's a shortstop by trade, but last year the Yankees had him play all over the place, the outfield, everywhere in the infield, and he's kind of the 25th man on the roster, whereas he's the emergency guy they could put in the field more likely is he's going to pinch run at some point. You know, even if they don't want to steal a base, he could score from first on a double, which, you know, Chase Headley can't do or whoever it ends up being. And that's why Wade's on the roster. Clint Frazier was, I didn't think they would take five outfielders, but I mean, they really had nobody else to carry for that fifth spot. There's really nobody else. And the thing is, the Yankees are healthy now, so they have, you know, they don't have a situation with Sano where I might not be able to go. The Yankees are healthy now, so they had their pick of position players. And, you know, I was looking at it earlier this week. I thought maybe Tyler Austin would make it as another kind of first baseman or right-handed bat if the lefty came in. But, you know, it's not a huge surprise that he was left off in favor of Frazier, who can run as well. He could be another pinch runner option for them.
Was Jonathan Holder in any of the conversations? I just look at his numbers, and nobody ever talks about him. He just seems like he's got pretty good numbers.
No, I don't think so. Holder's kind of a weird kind of prospect because he had a phenomenal season in the minors last year. It was ridiculous. Every year there are always minor league relievers that have just great seasons, and everybody's like, call him up, he's so good, and then he gets up and he's not really that good. And Holder was one of those guys where he had this ridiculous minor league season. The Yankees called him up, but he's like, he throws 91, 92. His fastball is pinned straight. His breaking ball is not that good. He seems to me like a guy who's going to have just phenomenal minor league numbers and just keep getting chances throughout his career. But I'm not sure there's enough there for him to really kind of be a high leverage guy for really any team. You know, if you're the Yankees, you got, at the very least, you got five guys ahead of him in the pecking order, and probably more than that.
Sure.
I'm not really sure what the deal is with Holder, because the Yankees have a lot of bullpen guys coming, a lot of pitching prospects in general who have better stuff and have numbers that maybe aren't as good as Holder's in AAA but are pretty good themselves. I think Holder might be kind of a 40-man roster casualty this offseason. He's going to end up getting picked up somewhere, but he wasn't much of a consideration for the playoff roster. He spent he was on the opening day roster, spent about 6 weeks with the team, pitched his way to AAA, and he stayed there the rest of the season. And the Yankees used him only sparingly in September. There was never really any indication that he was going to assume some kind of important role. And he might not even have been like the next guy in line for a bullpen spot. Ben Heller, who they got in the Andrew Miller trade, was probably next in line.
Oh, sure.
And, you know, Holder, it's just one of those, you know, you can't really trust minor league relievers, because it's like, I remember with the Yankees back here over years ago, Colter Bean was the big one, because this guy was like a funky sidearm righty who put up ridiculous numbers in AAA, and he just wasn't good enough to get out big leaguers. And Holder could. He's just not as good as his minor league numbers would lead you to believe. So he wasn't much of a consideration for the roster, I don't think.
Well, whatever happens, I think we're in for a really exciting game. Mike, thanks for your time today.
Yeah, I'm just expecting a low-scoring game tonight. Yeah. Even though it's in Yankee Stadium, the home runs are pretty easy to hit in this ballpark, I still think it's going to be a low-scoring game because of the starters. Once you get into the bullpen with Berrios and the Yankees relievers, I don't see runs coming often tonight.
Yeah, I think that'll keep it tense into the late innings. Well, again, thanks for your time. Make sure folks listening to check out Mike's work, CBS Sports and River Avenue Blues. Again, thank you so much, and best of luck to your Yankees.
Oh, thank you.
You got it. We've been listening to Midwest Swing, part of the Zone Coverage Podcast Network.